Internet, welcome to episode 97 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast that is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is my wonderful hostess, Erin Paulette. How you doing, Erin?
I'm here. I realize that you are all super duper worked up and enthusiastic, and I'm here.
I mean, I'm enthusiastic now because I'm recording a podcast, but today's been a nasty one. I think I've decided that the reason why you can't get hand sanitizer anywhere is because the world discovered that there is not enough booze. Don't mix that with aloe vera. Quick, mix that with ice. I'm doing my full-time job and now I'm homeschooling? Ugh. God, I think my daughter is officially sick of this crap. She's like, yeah, I miss my teacher. I miss my school. I don't want to do science class with you, Daddy. Oh, sweetie. Oh, this is not easy. So, yeah, we're just going on and on. And they keep talking about, you know what? I think it's May the 4th. It's Star Wars Day. Allegedly, mass schools are going to go back in and since you people are listening to this in the future, you'll probably be like, oh, let me look up the news thing. Oh, yeah, no, they extended it. Like, I don't see it. There are proposed ends in sight, and I don't believe them. I don't believe a single one of them. Like, all I can think of is the movie Apocalypse Now. And, of course, Robert Duvall in that, Lieutenant Colonel Kilgore. He is famous for the I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Which, honestly speaking, I think is kind of just a goofy line. Like, it's doesn't really hold a lot into it. But he also says, after the napalm line, he sits down and goes,
someday this war's gonna end.
Just kind of looks out wistfully over the burning jungle and then just kind of walks off. And I found that to be one of the most like poignant lines is just, it shows that like, okay, yeah, he's enjoying the smell of napalm as they just completely burn up this encampment of VC that's infringing on their surfing and then talks about how wonderful it smells and then turns around and kind of almost bittersweetly states that, you know what? Someday I'm not going to be in Vietnam fighting for my life. Such a bonkers movie. Have you seen Apocalypse Now?
I'm not sure if I have or not.
I'm going to take that as a no.
Well, see, the reason I'm not sure is that enough people have talked about it that I don't remember if I'm actually remembering or if I'm remembering people telling me about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Firefly level of quotability, so I could see that. Yeah, I really like it. My wife hates it. Because it's essentially just a movie about the pointlessness of the Vietnam War and just the brutality of the Vietnam War. So to put a plot to it, to put like a cohesive thing, plus it's based on Heart of Darkness, which I'm going to say not that great a book. Really good, interesting ideas in it, but overall not a particularly interesting read, at least as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah.
Okay, then.
Yeah, so someday this quarantine's going to be over, Erin. Someday my daughter's going to go back to school. and then I'll figure out what the stuff that I'm feeling are mindful. Am I doing the right thing?
Well, I'm glad we have that sorted out.
Yes. All right, well, let's dive right into the business talk of this, because I'm...
Yeah, sure, why not? Like I said, I'm here, man. It's not like it's really been a bad week. It's just sort of a, we're still talking about this. Like you said, you know, the war is still going, and it's just whatever. Yep. Whatever.
Yeah, but come on, let's turn it around. Let's not make it about the virus, Erin. Let's make it about us. Last week, we talked about how the fact that we had both written up about Bloomberg being like super duper like desperate and freaked out about The fact that all of these people are going into gun shops and they're mostly first time gun buyers from all that we're hearing in the reports, and there's huge amounts in like California and even in like LA and places like that. There are people just piling on, so it's not even like it's, oh yeah, there's lots of first time gun buyers in Texas. Granted, there's, you know, liberal people and people that don't support the Second Amendment in Texas, but yeah, you know what? But it seems like it's all over the country. People are going nuts to get their hands on guns. And I would argue rightly so, because a lot of the fear, quote unquote, fear mongering predictions have come true. So we talked about that last week, and I just saw an article. It was written a couple of days ago. We're recording this on the on Monday the 13th. I don't know what Monday the 13th means. Is there anything special on Monday the 13th?
Not really, but if I'm being honest, Monday the 13th scares me a hell of a lot more than Friday the 13th does. Because Friday, at least it's the weekend, but Monday, no, you got the week in front of you.
Ooh, Aaron, how often does... Because I believe Friday the 13th came about because Jesus was nailed up on the cross. The first Good Friday was on a 13th.
Okay, I am not a scholar. I have heard the same things you have, that it's because he was crucified on Good Friday and because there were 13 people at the Last Supper.
Ah!
Because the 12 disciples and Jesus.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
How that equates to Friday the 13th being unlucky is just sort of a... It's a reach. Mm-hmm. You know, well, 13 is unlucky and he died on Friday, so Friday the 13th must be bad. And, oh, look, there were 13 of them at the table and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And one of them was a dickhead, Judas. If you hadn't been there, it would have turned out better. Or not, depending on how you read your scripture. But
well, yeah, you know, if... I will spare you the discussion, but there's a whole line of philosophy about that. It's like it kind of had to happen because the sacrifice needed to happen, and so yeah. Anyway,
this is not the theological podcast. We'll leave that to Brother Lloyd Bailey. But
I mean, you know, I don't mind talking about this, but one, I know it's going to be relegated to a blooper reel, and two, I just don't have it in me right now.
Yeah, no, so. Yeah, if you're on the ACP blooper reel, you've definitely heard Aaron and I talk theology, because that is quality blooper reel material. Oh, but yeah, fishing boats are at least on the East Coast, they are fishermen are very superstitious of leaving port on Friday. So it's one of those, they never leave on a Friday. They leave on a Thursday, they leave on a Saturday, but never on a Friday. Some guys don't care. But
okay.
But it's just one of those superstitions.
Okay.
Yeah, considered bad luck, and I've always heard it tied to Good Friday.
Okay.
So, yeah, whatevs. But needless to say, this is an article by David Kadria. And for ammoland.com, and it's titled "Gun Grabber Desperation Showing as More Americans Buy Firearms." And this one is a little bit different than the article from the Trace that we both wrote up on, in the fact that he's citing a CNN op-ed by what's his name? John Feinblatt, who I honestly hadn't even heard his name before, but he is like evidently the president of Everytown, I think it is, or one of the... Let's see if I
look. I just want to point out that the article you're talking about was published on April 10th, and we recorded last week on April 6th. And so my article, "Bloomberg to Gun Culture Help Me," came out, oh, it was either the 7th or the 8th. Mm-hmm. And I was really afraid that I was desperately behind the curve because it was coming up on a month since that Trace article had come out.
Yep.
But I think I timed it just right because there was that lull, and now other people are jumping on this, and it's like, no, look, I'm ahead of the curve. Ha ha!
Yep.
So I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, but this one is all just fear-mongering, and he goes back and talks about the standard Everytown recommendation that guns be, if you're going to own guns, lock them up and make sure to have like a separate safe to lock up your ammunition because... You know, God forbid, one lock isn't enough. It needs to be double and triple locked.
Well, there's not even that, but there's actually in the article, or maybe it was someone else who said it, but I remember very distinctly, the advice given was take that new gun you bought and hide it behind the canned food and bags of beef jerky you bought.
Yes.
In other words, just wallet it away and pretend you don't have it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And never mind how dangerous that is. Needless to say, actually, I have the guy who, that's actually the guy from the Giffords lobby that I heard say that.
Oh,
and I,
okay.
I have his audio for a future Fisk. Don't worry. We'll be hearing that jerk.
Yeah. I mean, he's not even advocating that you lock it in a gun safe or whatever. It's just, no, just hide it in the pantry where your kids can find it.
Exactly. Exactly.
What? Oh, man. But yeah, I've derailed you, and I'm sorry. So where were you going with this?
Oh, I'm just talking about they're doubling down, and they're trying so hard to say, oh, so you finally had sex and found out it feels good, but abstinence is still wonderful. You can still just stop and never do it ever again.
And, please stop. We need you to stop.
Exactly. And there is a Brady. I should look it up on YouTube just to see what their views are. But the Brady campaign put out a webinar and on the COVID-19. It's titled "Webinar: COVID-19 Gun Sales and What Can Be Done." And Igor Volsky was on that. And let me just say, he was his bit was delicious. So that is also cut for a future audio fest. Don't you worry. I think that one might be next. But yeah, they have exactly 91 views now at the time of our recording.
And how many of those are yours?
One.
Oh, okay. I thought you might have gone back a couple of times.
It doesn't. I have tried that out. It doesn't work that way unless you like log out of YouTube and watch it unlogged in or all of that. So.
Oh, okay. Cookie tracking. I gotcha.
Yeah. No. If you're logged into YouTube, it won't double count that. Because yes. No. I did watch it three times because I had to record it.
See, there we go. That's the weird I know.
Exactly.
This is awful. I need to try it again just to make sure it's actually as awful as I think it is.
Oh, but it's an exciting awful because it's they're so dumb and I'm gonna beat them so hard. Again, the whole Napoleon quote of never interrupt your enemy when he is making a mistake. I'm like, you're making a mistake. This is gonna be beautiful. Oh, so we are ahead of the curve, Aaron. High five.
Yep, high five.
And people are buying lots and lots of guns, and hopefully they are going out and shooting those guns. Or maybe after the smoke clears and things get better, they're going to go out and shoot the guns. I honestly, like, ammo is so scarce and all that. I got to wonder how much is going through, or how much I've heard people talk about, like, waltz it into the pawn shop after the quarantine is lifted and just seeing all these new in-box guns sitting at the pawn shop for dirt cheap. I don't know. I hope that isn't the case, because I think people are going to say, oh, I spent a lot of money at this, and if I turn around and try to unload it at my local gun shop or pawn shop, they're going to be like, yeah, cool, we'll scrape $100 off the price you paid for it, and I'll take it off your hands.
Yeah, I am in an interesting position in that regard, because on the one hand, yes, I do want people to hang on to them. Like I've said before, a gun owner is a gun voter, and so the more people who have skin in the game, the more people who will be appalled at gun control laws and will vote against them, and that's great. But at the same time, I'm still hoping to get my hands on a lightly used KSG, because I've wanted one for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And they've always been more than I can afford. Mm-hmm. And for reasons I'm not going to get into, I can't, like, put it on the credit card. I've got to save up for this sort of thing.
I gotcha.
And so it's like, they're beautiful and I can't afford one. And so if someone buys it and brings it back, it's like, I don't care what color. I don't care how much they've shot it. Although imagine if they're doing that, they'll have hardly shot it, if at all. Mm-hmm. And if I can get one for just a fraction of the price, it'll be, yes, I want one. So I guess I want one person to return their gun and everyone else keep theirs.
Have you had a chance to shoot one? I know Oleg gets his hands on like a bunch of them. Yeah. You like them?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, the first time I shot one was at an Oleg photo shoot. Mm-hmm. And okay, so I don't like to brag, but I'm totally going to brag. When I fired it, it was great. I had no problem with it. I even handled the changeover between tubes with no problem. And when I was done, Oleg was impressed with me because he said, not many people can operate it that smoothly. I guess a lot of people, because it's a bullpup, they were like short stroking it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I've got little short arms and it's just, you know, it's a gun. I mean, it's not like I'm super rough with it, but I know I'm not going to break it. So it's just ka-chunk and drew it forward and I didn't have any single problems.
You also love your shotguns too. And when you love your shotguns, you know about short stroking. So you know that you don't love them gently.
Yeah, exactly. And so he was really impressed that for a first-time shooter, I didn't have any problems with it. And he was like, oh, I love it. I want to take it home. Mm-hmm. I can't. Darn.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've shot one. They are an absolute blast.
Yeah, I've handled that one, and I've handled the... Oh, what is the Turkish one that's also the pump-action bullpup with the double chambers, but it's... the Utas 12.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that was Turkish.
I believe so. Maybe I think there's been like a couple of different versions of it. I'm not 100% sure, but that if I had to buy a bullpup double tube shotgun, that would be the one I would probably grab. Though it is really bulky. When you pick up the Kel-Tec, it's nice mm-hmm. and svelte, but that one is set up. Number one, I like that it feeds every other tube, so you never mm-hmm. you never have to hit the switch like you do on the Kel-Tec. And I find the controls to be a little bit nice, but both of them are a little bit goofy in how to operate them, just because it's such mm-hmm. a radically different action. And so I just wanted to know what you thought of it. It's like shooting any bullpup. It's one of those, some people pick them up and go, oh, wow, this feels really comfortable. And I really like the feel of this gun. And other people are just like, I don't know where anything is.
Yeah, the last time I was at Oleg's house, he had, I thought it was an Utas, might have been something else, but it was a double tube shotgun that wasn't a KSG mm-hmm. sitting around. And I thought it was cool, although, yes, it's definitely, it's big and it's heavy, and I can't for the life of me remember what it was, but he had an objection to it. I'm going to have to ask him, but he was like, well, it's pretty good in theory, but it does this one particular thing that I don't like, and it's a game breaker for me, and oh, dang, I wish I knew what that was.
The goofy thing, it does like one really, really goofy thing, which is essentially it doesn't feed the rounds off the magazine. It feeds them off of a little, like, it's like a green room, really, is what to say. It's got like three chambers in it, so to speak. And when a round goes into the chamber, the little green room, and there's one on either side of the chamber that feeds into the barrel, that one empties out. It hits the interrupter just like around. And so instead of going onto an elevator like it would on a regular pump action shotgun, it dumps into this little room, and it just drops onto it just like it would on the elevator of a shotgun. So it's no longer on spring pressure. And essentially they're behind two little, they look like AR dust covers. And so mm-hmm. if you ever wanted to top off this shotgun, what you would need to do is, number one, when the tube goes dry, the actual follower comes all the way out. It prolapses, if you will, into the anteroom. Jeez. And so there's a follower with a whole bunch of spring. If you open up the door and it's empty, there's a follower and a whole bunch of spring in there. And the first thing you do is you push that one into the chamber, and then you'd load your tube, and then you can drop around onto the into the little green room, if you will. That's the term I'm going to use for it. I don't know if they have a name for it, but you can actually just drop around into that little empty space. You close the dust cover. It's ready to go. Then you turn around, and if you wanted to retop it, you would actually need to take the round that's in the green room, because once you close it up, there's a round in there, you'd have to push it back into the magazine, and then you can drop the next round in or start stuffing more rounds into the magazine. So it's just a little bit weird. Like if you shot five rounds and wanted to load five more in, you'd kind of have to load six, because you'd have to have that one that's in the elevator type place.
So while you were talking, I actually texted Oleg and asked him, And he said it was clunky, the tube couldn't be topped off, it was easy to hurt fingers with the mag followers, and it was fragile. He saw four ends fall off.
Oh, crazy.
He's been told Gen 3 is much better, but he's not sure he believes that.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting. Well, either way, I didn't want to commit to the price of one of those. I asked them for a T&E, and they they must have looked at my blog.
Okay, here we go, because I was waiting for another reply. I mean, he said all that, and I said, I thought there was like a deal breaker. There was something being too close to the face, and he says, the tube selector is a steel part right by your nose, and it can hit you on recoil.
Oh.
That's what it was. And when he explained that, I went, oh, yeah, I could see how that could totally be a problem.
Interesting. Yeah. And also, like, the way they've set it up, like, they could have tucked it, like, underneath, like, in the KSG and have it be out of the way. Because technically speaking, it's really kind of a specialty piece. Because if you set it in the middle, it's going to feed every other shell. If you set it to the left, it's only going to feed from the left or right. I don't remember which, if it's a disconnector or a selector, but you set it for one. You can get it to fire only from one tube. You can get it to only fire from another tube, or you can set it in the middle and it'll fire left, right, left, right, left, right. So,
okay.
It's an interesting design, but in the end, I'll just take a rifle. Thank you. I'm not much of a shotgun guy. But I am a gun nerd, so I could just blow 15 minutes talking about obscure bullpup shotguns.
Well, yeah. So speaking about guns and desperation and the fact that I'm just sort of here, I need something funny. You know, we've been laughing at the, no, stop buying guns. But I understand that you've actually got some comedy for us here.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually funny. So we'll have a listen, because unfortunately the weird audio fisk is conducive to humor, but you'll see what happens.
Yeah, this is the only weird audio fisk I know of where you've actually assigned homework. It's like, before you listen, go listen to this other thing.
Yeah, it is worth a listen. So I'll say it here and say it then. I'm not doing it any favors chopping it up. The jokes are definitely funnier if you watch the whole bit. And I will say, I thought the bit was pretty funny. So yeah, you got homework. So come on back, or I'll warn you. So here we go. This may be a first for the Weird Audio Fisks. I know I've fist anti-gun comedy before. Hell, the first ACP Weird Audio Fisk was Trevor Noah on The Daily Show. But this may be the first where I have fist a comedy routine that's actually funny. So in respect for the art, if you have the time, pause this podcast right now and follow the show notes to YouTube, or look this up wherever comedy may be found, and listen to it in its entirety, because I'm going to cut it up and mess up the timing, which is totally not fair to the artist. The artist in question is Steve Hofsetler from his comedy special, Secret Optimist. So while we can understand that comedy often uses exaggeration, hyperbole, bending of reality, and straight up fantasy to weave a joke, that doesn't mean that serious people might take jokes that agree with their worldview and use them to frame a political argument. How many times have you heard an anti-gunner cite this?
You don't need no gun control. You know what you need? We need some bullet control. We need to control the bullets. That's right. I think all bullets should cost $5,000. $5,000 for a bullet. You know why? Because if a bullet costs $5,000, there'll be no more innocent bystanders.
Hilarious bit from an even funnier special. And despite that joke being made in 1996, it is constantly being referenced by anti-gunners as a serious idea. Even when Mr. Rock wasn't serious about wanting laws legislating obscene prices for single rounds of ammunition. Okay, so here's your last chance to listen to Mr. Hofsetler's comedy before I break out the fisking scalpel. Don't say I didn't warn you.
Now for the gun owners in the crowd, and this is Indiana, so away we go.
Great opening line. Not only is he starting off by recognizing the popularity of firearms ownership, he also isn't somehow claiming that gun owners are different in some way than real people. He's even implying that gun owners, including Second Amendment supporters, are likely in the audience and fans of his. Well played, because you now have my attention.
Gun owners in the crowd, I have a point to make. No one's coming for your guns. You sound dumb when you speak like that. They're taking our guns! No.
Okay, this is hands down the least funny joke you're going to hear from this Fisk, simply because it isn't true. It would be funny if it was true, but in 2016, the runner-up for president and the winner of the popular vote said this.
The Australian government, as part of trying to clamp down on the availability of automatic weapons, offered a good price for buying hundreds of thousands of guns. So I think that's worth considering.
And then last year, one of the presidential candidates said this on the debate stage.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
And he was greeted with thunderous applause, not only from the people attending the debate, but there were 9 other politicians on the stage that day, and not one of them took any issue with that statement. One of the men on the stage is the current Democrat nominee for president, and he said this.
And by the way, this guy can change the face of what we're dealing with. In regard to guns, assault weapons, in regard to dealing with climate change. And I just want to warn Amy, if I win, I'm coming for it.
So yeah, they are coming for our guns. I know this because they have told us this so many times that really anybody who thinks that a gun owner is paranoid for saying this is themselves a total lunatic.
No one's taking your... We want you to register your guns like you register anything potentially dangerous. You register your car with no issue.
Anything potentially dangerous? When I bought my house, it had a small above-ground pool. That nasty thing went right into the dumpster. And then I renovated what would be my armory. Because pools are dangerous. I usually tell that story for a laugh. But what's really funny is I know more people who are afraid of guns than are of pools. Yet pools are really dangerous. Not only do you have drownings, there are also serious injuries. Like conservative pundit Charles Krauthammer, who was confined to a wheelchair due to a pool accident. Needless to say, we don't register our pools. I have power tools. I don't register them. I've certainly hurt myself more with my knives than any other implement in my house. Nobody's even suggested registering knives. Still, when we register cars, why do we do it? Does it prevent any crimes? Well, except for driving an unregistered vehicle, it doesn't. Does it help police catch speeders or drunk drivers? Nope. Really, all it's good for is letting the government know where you live so they can send you your tax bill. Same goes for gun registries. Most of America doesn't have one, but the places that do, they aren't used by law enforcement for anything. Elsewhere in the world, registries are useful tools for confiscation. And since I've already showed that they are coming for our guns, I don't advise anybody to register their firearms.
When you're at the DMV, you're like, they're taking our cars. What did you just say? Yeah, first we get driver's licenses, and next thing you know, we're walking everywhere! It's a slippery slope! No, sometimes it's flat land.
Okay, that's a good line. Still, the only reason why they aren't coming for our cars is because there isn't a massive corporate lobby that exists for the sole purpose of banning and confiscating all cars. And there aren't politicians promising that if they get elected, they would ban and confiscate the most popular cars in America. So sometimes it is level ground, but not with guns.
I'm sure that there are gun owners in this crowd right now who are getting uncomfortable. You're getting upset about this material, but every single gun owner here knows someone who owns a gun that you wish didn't. Every last one of you has been to the firing range and been like, Brad's here, we're all gonna
frig in
and die. Every single one of you. That's who I don't want to have a gun.
You know, he's totally right. I remember once some friends and I were shooting in a local sand pit in Maine. We were packing up when a few more cars pulled in. We decided to be friendly and say hi and show where we'd been shooting and see what they had. As we were admiring their guns, their other buddy showed up with a cooler filled with beers. Have a good day, guys. And we got the living hell out of there. That being said, those guys weren't on the evening news. To continue with the car analogy, I know people who I wish wouldn't drive cars. They suck at it and they're constantly in fender benders. But they still drive. Only when you are convicted of a serious crime like habitual speeding or drunk driving do they actually take your license away. Same goes for guns. Except drunk drivers get their license back. Once you're a prohibited person, unless you go to great lengths to get your restriction removed, you are prohibited from owning firearms for life.
Because of the amendment. Second Amendment protects them as a right and not a privilege. And I'll give you that. I'll give you the Second Amendment. Defend the Second Amendment with all of your heart if you also defend every other amendment.
He's right, but I think he's also talking to a straw man. I know very few Second Amendment activists who aren't absolutists on the entire Bill of Rights. I also know very few anti-gun activists who believe in the Bill of Rights at all. If the right of the people to keep and bear arms is not something you think is relevant, the right of the people to be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures is also just as irrelevant. I'm looking at you, Mike Stop and Frisk Bloomberg. How many times have I fist people who have essentially said that HIPAA should be thrown out when it comes to gun owners and mental illness?
Amendment people are hilarious.
Freedom of speech, right to bear arms? I'm tired.
Like what? About the rest.
I find it odd that he skipped out on the Fourth Amendment, as that, like the First and Second, are under constant attack. And those of you who are also fighting with me for the right to keep and bear arms are just as upset at the eroding of those rights as well.
There are so many. Like the Seventh Amendment. No one ever cares about the Seventh Amendment. Why doesn't anyone ever defend the Seventh Amendment? None of you even know what it says. Some of you are trying to think of it right now. You're like, is it plead the Fifth? No, that's the Fifth Amendment. The Seventh. The Seventh Amendment says that every civil matter involving more than $20 can go to full jury trial. Or maybe it doesn't. You know,
fiddlestick.
No, my point is...
Okay, that's good. Also, did you know the Seventh Amendment off the top of your head? I didn't. Several years ago, I made it a point to memorize the entire Bill of Rights, and I did. And then I forgot most of it. Because, yeah, I don't know any politicians or lobbyists who are out to make trial by jury illegal. So yeah, I know 1 through 5 by heart. And the 14th, 18th, and 21st, I know too. But that's because those are ones I reference frequently.
Either amendments are sacred, or they're not. It's as simple as that.
Exactly. Hence why I always praise the anti-gun activists who demand we repeal the Second Amendment. I don't agree with their goals, but their principles match mine. Remember me talking about the 18th and 21st Amendment? The 18th banned the sale of alcohol. By the way, those were better times, when the statist busybodies actually amended the Constitution to take our booze away. Nowadays, they ban bump stocks by friggin' executive order. How far we have fallen. But when we realized that booze was awesome and banning it caused huge gang wars and massive surges in violent crime, they brought in the 21st Amendment to repeal the 18th. So yeah, if you wanted to ban or limit the sale of ownership of guns, pass an amendment first, and us 2A geeks won't have much to holler about.
I think that the Second Amendment is important. I think that a person who is educated and responsible and regulated should be allowed to own a gun. However...
Yep, this one again. No, the well-regulated militia does not mean overburdened with laws and government oversight. And one just needs to see how the various state militias were operated to see that this isn't true. Plus, one just needs to look at gun control to see that these regulations don't really do anything well. I must say, Steve, this is the real version of your first joke. Well-regulated is not about laws or the government. You sound dumb when you say that.
If you need a gun because you're afraid of the government, you don't know how tanks work.
Just curious, what kind of tanks did the Taliban and Mujahideen use in Afghanistan? There are whole books written about Soviet, United States, and coalition forces tanks. But I can't think of any stories of coalition or Soviet forces coming up against rolling armor while at war in Afghanistan. And who won both of those wars? So yeah, great joke, Steve. But you have a lot to learn when it comes to the politics of gun control. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
So, the thing about tanks...
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm I'm not an expert by any means. I'm just some schmuck on the internet who happens to speak a little bit of military lingo and who hangs out with a lot of veterans. You know, I have not been trained in asymmetric warfare at all. I know how to defeat tanks. It's not difficult. It takes a lot of work, but it's not difficult. The best way to defeat a tank is you dig a pit and you cover it. The tank falls in.
A tiger trap.
Yeah. I mean, best case scenario for the tank is, okay, it's just sort of there and it can rotate the turret, but, you know, it's not going to be able to get itself out. And, you know, guys need to get out sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to do it is to use Molotov cocktails. And you don't even need to penetrate the armor. You just make the interior inhospitable.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, if you've got a tank that's trapped in that pit, oh, you can smoke people out real easily. And I actually have two JAFs that I'm posting here. One of them is from an uprising in Bahrain, and I'm not sure where the other one is, but you can just see there are a whole bunch of people who just come out of nowhere, and just all of a sudden, that armored vehicle, yeah, it's burning.
Yep.
And it doesn't have to defeat the armor. Oh, and by the way, these armored vehicles, they have rubber tires once those suckers catch.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, I'm obviously not advocating that we kill members of our armed forces, but on the other hand, if they are trying to kill us, there are things we have to do, and we don't even need to shoot them with a gun. You know, you can defeat them with a pit and with fire. So this guy, he doesn't know much about this sort of thing. And yeah, I know you were talking about Afghanistan, and well, you know, Afghanistan, graveyard of empires. Mm-hmm. You know, the Russians tried to defeat it with tanks, among other things, and they withdrew. We had some slightly better luck, but it's not like we completely rolled over it either. And yeah, it's anyone who thinks that, you know, the whole your gun won't protect you against tanks or battleships or nuclear missiles or fighter jets is like, look, you obviously don't know what you're talking about. You don't. Shut up. I'm embarrassed on your behalf.
Yeah. And the idea of anytime you go up against an insurgency war, which if the United States government goes tyrannical, it's as, you know, Thomas Jefferson was talking about, or just the Revolutionary War, you know, whatever you want to say, the big igloo, it will be an insurgency war. And be it Afghanistan, be it Iraq after the fall of the Republican Guard, or be it Vietnam, when you're not fighting against regular troops, you're fighting against just people defending their homes and all that, they are awful hard to defeat. You can win battles, but actually winning the war is nigh impossible.
Well, I mean, there's a way to win, but it's brutal.
Yeah.
And it would just be, well, okay, the classic answer is nukes. You know, if we render the area completely devoid of life, okay, you'll have won.
But also that defeats the whole point of tyrannical government. The whole point is they want to rule over the area. If the area is a radioactive glass parking lot.
Oh, that's true. I felt the need to be pedantic.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those, no, you can do it. It's just incredibly pyrrhic.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's either overreact or no, it's going to be ugly. So that's my main objection to this line of thinking. He made some points. You made better points. I didn't think he was all that funny, but okay.
Did you do the homework, Aaron?
Yes, of course I did the homework. I listened to the whole thing.
I was waiting for you to say, no! Weird, I'm not going to do any extra work for you.
Well, I did it because you recommended it and because you said it was funny.
Oh, it was.
Mm.
I liked the Seventh Amendment one. Did you know the Seventh off the top of your head?
No, I didn't.
Come on, that is good. I mean, it's, again, I would argue we don't know the Seventh because nobody is going after the Seventh. Just the same way as I remember hearing, picking up an onion. It was actually a print onion, and they had a whole thing about a Third Amendment activism group, and it was just hilarious. We're fighting against troops being quartered in our homes.
You know, there was actually a Third Amendment lawsuit within recent memory.
Oh, yeah, about the stakeout.
I didn't know if it was a stakeout or if it was a SWAT team operation.
Yeah.
But essentially, the police kicked people out of their house because they needed to keep tabs or be able to shoot or whatever the next house. Mm-hmm. And people are going, they're living in our house. This is obviously quartering.
Yep.
And I know it went to trial. I think they won, but I'm not certain.
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head. You just surprised me with that one. I wasn't even thinking about that story. But
it surprised me too. Otherwise, I'd have the facts prepared.
Yep.
This was in July 2013. It was in Nevada. Sued the city of Henderson, Nevada, claiming that police officers violated the Mitchell family's home without permission. Okay, I'm sorry. The article was published 2013. The events happened in July 2011. Cops called his home, said they needed to occupy the house in order to gain a tactical advantage in dealing with a domestic violence case at a neighbor's home. Mm-hmm. And he said he told the officer he didn't want officers to enter his house. And nevertheless, five of them showed up and smashed the door open with a battering ram before pointing their guns at him, swearing at him and telling him to lie on the floor. And as he lay on the floor with his hands over his face, officers fired pepper ball projectiles at him, causing him injury and severe pain. And of course, they fired one at the dog.
Oh, of course.
Although it's pepper ball, so it probably didn't kill it. But, the animal was locked outside the home for hours without water, shade, or food on a day where temperatures reached more than 100 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's lovely. So Anthony and Michael Mitchell, okay, that would be his father, were charged with obstructing an officer and spent 9 hours in jail, and they sought punitive damages, and let me see if I can, I mean, that's the trial, or that's the claim. I don't know if it's gone to trial or not, and oh, it was dismissed by a federal district court judge. Great.
Mm.
And the reasoning being that a municipal police officer is not a soldier for purposes of the Third Amendment.
Yep. I mean, that is...
Don't worry. I know what you're going to say. You're going to say that our militarized police are basically the standing army that our founding fathers were concerned about.
I was not, but that is entirely a line that I repeat frequently.
Well, yeah, that's why I thought you were
going to
say.
No, I was going to point out the fact that, I mean, this happens at any time there's a debate on the internet where someone says police or civilians, and people quickly point out police are civilians. But mm-hmm. I also would agree that SWAT teams serve exactly the purpose. When you read about the founding fathers, they always talk about not having a standing army, and I've got to say we have a standing army now, and honestly speaking, I don't have much of a problem with it at all. But when it comes to SWAT teams and how they interact with the populace, I see that as much closer to the standing armies that the founding fathers were afraid of.
Mm-hmm. All right, so circling back to what we touched on in our main topic, and maybe we should have had this one first. I don't know. I didn't set up this outline, and that was just weird. But as we mentioned last week and in today's main topic, there are a lot of people buying guns for the very first time. And since even Bloomberg had to turn to gun culture for a resource on how to educate these new gun owners, it's now on us, gun culture as a whole, to welcome these new members into our fold. David is here to give us examples on how we can guide them instead of driving them away.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. For this segment, I've decided to talk about something more topical than usual: the firearm buying panic that some of us are currently seeing at our local gun shops. With all the news agencies banging the COVID-19 drum, state and local governments trying to outdo each other with restricting movement and commerce, and no end in sight, people are scared. Where I work, lots of people are coming in looking for something with which to defend Fort Sharman. Many of these people are first-time customers. Some of them have told me they never imagined they would ever even own a gun. As I've mentioned previously, I live in Tennessee, and the process here to purchase a firearm from a dealer is pretty simple. All people need to do is fill out the federal Form 4473, get run through the state background check system, and, assuming they get a proceed on that, pay for their gun and take it home. People in many other states are not as fortunate and may find themselves running face first into laws they were unaware of or may even have supported in the past. As we interact with these prospective new gun owners, there are some concepts I'd like everyone to try to keep in mind. Compassion, not indifference. This is not the time to point and laugh. This is the time for calm and patient explanations. Help them understand what the laws are and, if appropriate, some of the history behind those laws. If you can, help them navigate local firearms laws. If you're unsure yourself, introduce them to a knowledgeable person or direct them to a reputable website. Inform, don't lecture. These people are not part of the firearm community. They may not have any knowledge about this subject at all. Clips and magazines are equally foreign and strange, and assault weapons are a real thing to their understanding. We want them to be safe, among other reasons, because as sure as governments love power, any mishap with firearms will be laid at our feet. Let them know where they can get training. If you don't know yourself, reach out to one of the local volunteer instructors with Operation Blazing Sword. Guide, don't dismiss. In my shop, we've sold out of shotguns several times. We're still getting stock in on a regular basis. However, if someone wanted a pump shotgun because they believe the sound of the action will scare away criminals, and now they're frantic because there aren't any pump shotguns available, guide them to something else. Maybe they'd be comfortable with a pistol-caliber carbine or a lever-action rifle. Possibly a handgun would fulfill their needs. If you feel they're up to it, an AR can be an excellent choice. Tailor this guidance to their ability and what's currently available in your area. Don't push them too far out of their comfort zone. Just looking at a gun might be about all they can handle right now. Educate, don't scold. If you know this person did previously support gun control, point out, again, calmly and patiently, that this is the gun control they supported. Take the time to describe how these laws generally don't stop criminal activity, but do impact peaceable citizens like them. They may also feel like a hypocrite for even wanting a gun after a lifetime of believing that guns are inherently bad. This internal conflict can make them defensive if they feel pushed. Be informative, not judgmental. Based on what they've been told for many years, all gun owners are terrible, horrible, no good, very bad people, even the ones who live in Australia. Don't reinforce any of those beliefs. As the saying goes, be the change you want to see in the world. By our actions, these people can potentially become allies. At worst, after this panic is over, they'll remember our kindness and, hopefully, not judge all gun owners by how the media portrays us. In addition, they may offer to sell us their practically unused gun at a reasonable price. So whatever state you're in, whatever the laws are, no matter how reasonable or draconian, be compassionate, not indifferent. Inform, don't lecture. Guide, don't dismiss. And educate, don't scold. In the immortal words of Bill S. Preston, Esquire, be excellent to each other.
Hi, I'm Weird Beard. I love old guns, mixed drinks, and putting links in the show notes. I'd tell you a story, but the show would be over before I got to the point.
That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me, or suggestions for future segments, or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page, and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, really good, especially his lines on the make sure you're not lecturing people, make sure you're not scolding people, make sure you're not overwhelming them with jargon. We want to welcome them in because you don't want to scare them away.
But just the urge to be smug and tell them I was right all along is just so powerful.
Well, you know what? You know what's better than telling somebody that you're right? Having them find out that you were right along.
Oh, I mean, look, I'm not arguing with you, and I would bite my tongue, but there have been so many times where it's just, how much I want to put the boot in right now, but I won't. I can't.
Oh, and by the way, I love, and he also even put it in the show notes. He referenced Alexander and the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. And let's just say at about 10 this morning, I was reading it to my daughter because my daughter was having a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. And I was having a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. And I was thinking about this as I was coming downstairs to start recording the show with Aaron. And I said, you know what? I gotta kind of just, you know, psych myself up to talk about what a crappy day that that I was having. I mean, you know, nothing, you know, super serious. Woke up earlier than I wanted to and feeling tired and crappy. You know,
woke up earlier than you wanted to. What was it? 2 a.m? 3?
No, it was 4. But I was up late recording Handgun Radio, so I was tired. And
I'm sorry, you get no sympathy from me, sir. If you normally get up at 4 and you're complaining about getting up at 4, no, too bad.
And it was trash day, and my paper shredder was full, and we'd got a note from the town that you can't put that in the recycling bins anymore. And I'm like, ugh, I'm not going to put it in the garbage can because God forbid the garbage can blows over and there'll be just shredded paper all over the street. So I was dumping it into a trash bag, and the shredder bin didn't fit in the trash bag, and it just spilled all over my basement floor. And I'm like, great, now I get a vacuum. It was just, it went down there from there. And then finally I'm like, okay, all right, time for us to, all right, the weather is horrible today. So normally my daughter and I go out for a morning walk. We do our quote unquote walk to school just as a way to get some of that morning energy out. And so that she can be nice and settled down and ready to do schoolwork. And so he didn't do that. So I'm like, okay, well, it's my day to work out anyway. So I'm like, you want to go upstairs and lift weights? Yes, I do. And so he told me, all right, well, what do you want to do for a workout? Because we actually watched some YouTube videos of some people that have some stay-at-home workouts that they've done during this lockdown. She's like, I don't want to do that. I want to do my own thing. So that's totally cool. So long as you're behaving appropriately and not like climbing on the furniture and just making horrible choices. And talked about music. Oh, no, you're not doing the music the right way. And drama. And she was doing a cartwheel and hurt herself. And it was just one of those, like, oh, I just want to, like, get in the zone and work out because I hate working out. And I want to just not think about this. And then finally we get down to start doing schoolwork. And, Daddy, I don't want to do any schoolwork. And I'm just like, sweetie, we have to. But I miss my teacher and I miss my friends. And storm up. And I'm like, let's read this book. And then fast forward to like an hour ago, I come downstairs and I'm like, Aaron, it'll be a little bit. It appears that this horrible wind has blown one of my gutters loose and my basement is filled with water.
Oh,
I'm not filled. It's like less than a gallon, but.
Well, okay. I didn't literally think it was filled up to the doorway, yeah. But the floor was awash.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it was wet. There were puddles. Where there shouldn't be puddles.
not really digging in on the sympathy there, Weird.
It's just I thought I'd saw, well, it's because the gutter blew loose. At first I was just like, damn it, because I'd mounded up some dirt away from this part of the foundation that's got a leak, and that seemed to have fixed it, but the gutter blew loose, and so it was just pouring water straight down the foundation, and in it goes. And yeah, it's always a mess, and I just gotta break out the shop vac. No fun. So, but now I'm recording a podcast.
Well, yes. Yes, you are.
And I guess now's the time to break out. I gotta say, I did not expect David to bring us in a segment for this week, because I'll just say he unfortunately lost his father, and I just wanted to say that our hearts are going out to you, David. I know that's it's a big loss, and honestly speaking, there's a part of me that's happy that it's a big loss. That, you know what, it sounds like he was an absolutely wonderful man, and I just wanted to say that the entire ACP family, our hearts are going out to you, man.
Absolutely.
So shifting gears. As with gunplay, there is a mix of fact and fiction when it comes to detectives in movies. How does that gumshoe get his lead on the target? Does he call in a favor from his friend on the force? Does he force entry into the last known residence? Does he bribe a wino across the street for information? Or is it simple deus ex machina? In reality, a private detective has a lot of tools at his disposal, so the ACP House Dick is going to tell us all about information gathering in another Tales from the Trunk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to your next segment on Tales from the Trunk. I am, of course, your friendly neighborhood trunk monkey. And speaking with Weird on various topics, he had some curiosity, and some listeners may have some curiosity, too, regarding how I come across my information that I get on individuals that I tend to investigate. First and foremost, because the majority of my work is insurance-related, I have essentially all their vitals, or at least semi-recent vital information, name, address, serial number, phone number, the cars they drive, workplaces, that sort of thing. Now, of course, that being said, with that comes client privilege and privacy laws like HIPAA, so those particular things aren't discussed outside of that particular envelope, as it were. And basically, most of the time, I'd say probably 85% of the time, the information is updated and correct. Sometimes the information does tend to be a little old or outdated, particularly if the claim is long-running. And of course, in places like Detroit, most folks are driving uninsured and, as we like to call it, riding dirty. About 60% of the public in the city of Detroit, mostly because of the high cost of insurance in the city of Detroit, due to various risk factors and actuarial tables that, you know, insurance companies are more than happy to explain to you as being, yeah, it's more dangerous to keep a car in the city of Detroit due to theft, loss, and fraud. Now, when it comes to domestic work, usually it's spouses or significant others, and there's a good deal of information, personal and otherwise, that can be obtained that way. In terms of things like information that you can acquire as a private citizen, it's slim to nil. Of course, you can go to websites like, I think, benverified.com, spend a few bucks. You know, White Pages used to be at least semi-reliable for almost recent or current addresses, tied to phone numbers and stuff like that. The data has become slightly more inaccurate as time has gone on, particularly in the last year and a half. So it's mostly caveat emptor, you know, buyer beware if you want to dig something up on a neighbor. The information you're going to find online on the various websites as John Q. Public are going to be relatively inaccurate. In terms of things like what sources I use that I have access to, I have access to various insurance databases, credit databases. So if I have basic information, I can find out where you lived and what you drive. One of my particular favorites is Delve Point, which has a really easy to use interface. It's just like, you know, typing in a form, fill in a couple blanks, and it spits out a result. That's a subscription-based service that I have basically due to my license. And there are certain data requirements, companies like LexisNexis. So if you're familiar with the legal field, you know, that's where basically all legal documents are stored and accessible to various parties with certain permissions. I have to have a locking cabinet in the office, for secured data that's, you know, printed out. So, you know, I can't just be a fly-by-night person claiming to be X. And then they give me the proverbial keys to the kingdom. There are a few other databases aside from LexisNexis, Delve Point, that I won't get into for various privacy reasons and to keep my edge, as it were. And social media. it's really interesting what you can find with just a simple Google search. And that can open things up. So as a private citizen, you can't necessarily do what I would call damage, but you can find out a lot of information on individuals, particularly if you're part of the under 40 crowd. Most everybody has some sort of social media presence. There are a few applications that I have access to that will crawl the web for social media that I use. And of course, you know, those all have added costs, which are baked in and passed on to the client. In terms of what I have access to that law enforcement grade, nothing. I don't have access to lien because I'm not law enforcement. I've dealt with investigators that have had, you know, law enforcement experience. They may still have access, or they like to say, well, you know, let me call in a favor. That, of course, is illegal and can include fines and penalties and imprisonment, and it's generally bad practice to do. And that's something I've had to train out of investigators that I've brought on or worked with that have had a law enforcement background. So, you know, it's generally one of those things that I don't touch, and I have to deprogram out of other investigators who may have had access to it in the past. And with those various subscription services, like DelvePoint and LexisNexis, they're constantly changing, upgrading their system. DelvePoint has added a social media crawling program to it. So, you know, if I have basic information on an individual, something maybe as simple as a phone number, it'll find a social media profile attached to that particular phone. I can also do things, which is really neat, vehicle sightings, which has been kind of fun to use. Of course, it has a cost baked into it as well. So anytime your car passes a traffic camera or has been pinged by law enforcement, if they were driving behind you and they decided to run your plate, you know, your tag will show up on a map somewhere, without getting too detailed into that. And with regards to asking law enforcement nicely, I don't. If I wanted to get access, I keep it extremely above board. You know, a good source for information would be the neighbors. And generally, if anybody says, well, hey, you know, my cop buddy gave me this information, well, your cop buddy just broke the law. And I'd love that cop's name because I'd love to bury him under a mound of paperwork and get him stripped of his badge. Just, you know, just being plainly honest about it. So when it comes to stalkers, you know, I'm sure there are illicit ways. You know, dark web sells everybody's data to everybody else anyhow. And I don't really have any specific experience in that particular instance. Now, in terms of me going out and getting information, with things like knocking on doors, yeah, I can craft a, you know, a completely believable pretext. I'm not a fan of lying to the public because, you know, that could be, you know, considered like a causative action if I was to talk to a target. One of the things I learned early on in the business with regards to insurance fraud is, you know, if I'm not seeing anything, the last thing I want to do is to take like a $5 bill and glue it to somebody's front porch, ring the doorbell, and then go hide with my camera to record the gentleman with the back injury bending over at the waist to pick up the $5 bill on his front porch. Again, I'm just an observer, a little better than a security guard, really. Observe and report, in that regard, at least. I've used a bunch of different pretexts. I've got clipboards, hard hats, little amber magnetic lights for the car, signs for car doors, clipboard. It's amazing what you can get out of people with a security vest or a ladder. I don't have space for a ladder, but a clipboard, a pad of paper, and some mailing labels, I can get just about anything from anybody. Again, like I said, I'm not a fan of it. And there's a lady I work for. She could sell ice to Eskimos. Her bluffs are convincing, and she's not a lady, you know, that you'd want to really cross. admittedly, the unicorn is a lot like that. She can get the information she wants out of just about anybody. So that's basically, you know, the long and short of it. Sometimes I go by the seat of my pants. And a lot of times, you know, I may just have an address, a name, and a car. And then you work backwards from there. So, you know, every day can be a puzzle or an adventure. Or like my last segment, it could wind up in a headache with weeks of downtime and a little bit of frustration at the system. So, as always, guys, stay safe, stay sane, and keep your nose clean. Thanks.
It's so weird, no pun intended, listening to him in this calm environment. He's got a better microphone, I believe, and of course he's not in the car. Mm-hmm. And so it's strange when he does a segment without the road noise.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel correct anymore. It's got this sort of surreal feeling.
Though he's still rummaging around and doing other stuff. He's still not taking a whole lot of care about the quality of the audio, which, come on, it adds to the charm.
Well, last week when he was loading magazines, it's like, okay, that's cool. It's fine. I understand. But I don't know. I didn't hear a lot of fidgeting this time. It was just him and the microphone.
Yep. I remember I was telling my wife about the service that tracks the license plates, and I'm just like, oh god. And my wife's like, oh god, another reason to hate red light cameras, because they're finking on you to the private dicks.
Yeah, that was something I didn't know. I thought, well, I guess because I didn't really give it a lot of thought, I just assumed they only took pictures when you sped through the red light. I didn't realize they were filming all the time. That of course makes sense now that I think about it, because it requires a lot more code to, okay, well, you know, the thing has gone red, so now let's start recording, versus we just have it going all the time.
Yeah, and it's one of those, it's just like dash cameras. Your dash camera is always recording, because by the time a crash happens, it can't go back to it. So instead, it's going to be recording all the time. And when there is an event, it will just simply save the important stuff. And then on top of that, license plates are insanely easy to scan with computer technology, because they're done in big block letters and they don't have difference in fonts or anything like that. So why not have a nice tool for the police and evidently also private investigators, where if there is an APB for a vehicle, all you got to do is just look and see, all right, was there a time where it was picked up by a traffic camera, or did an officer scan the plate and just, it's just go get on there of the, this vehicle was last seen here. So, I mean, it's kind of like this quarantine stuff is one of those, like, I don't like that you're doing it, but I get that it makes sense.
You know, I think the overall theme of this episode is, yeah, we were ignorant about some stuff, and it's kind of embarrassing to admit it.
Mm-hmm.
But as I heard somewhere, and I honestly don't remember where, someone once said that ignorance is a curable perversion. And so, all right, well, we were dumb, and now we are less dumb.
And we dragged you along with us, kicking and screaming, you the wonderful listeners.
Well, I was just talking about you and me, weird. But yeah, I suppose, you know, that's the lesson for today. We're all kind of dumb. And if at the end of the day we're less dumb, then it was a good day.
And remember, some of us are dumber than others.
And thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special ACP thanks to all of our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcaliberspodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump. Isn't that wonderful, children?
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off. You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weirdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
So you can find me all over the place. You know this. And this is where I usually put in the, oh yeah, I meant to mention, and I forgot. And so, first of all, we've got a raffle going. It's awesome. You should absolutely buy more tickets. Weird, you bought some tickets. You need to buy more.
Okay.
But the other thing is that Operation Blazing Sword and Pink Pistols, we are now an affiliate for USCCA.
Ooh.
Which is, it's almost exactly like an Amazon affiliate, except we get a better return. And so, well, okay, if you're already a member, it's really not going to help, but it might. So we have a direct link which contains the affiliate ID. It's just like with Amazon, and I'm going to go ahead and have that appended to the show notes. But if, for example, you sign up for a USCCA class, there is a place where you can enter the affiliate code. And so even if you're already a member, you can give money to us by signing up for a USCCA class. And our affiliate code is 19757. 19757. And so if you use that, it doesn't cost you any more money, but Operation Blazing Sword and Pink Pistols gets a little something-something back from USCCA. And this is awesome for several reasons. Everyone needs training. Everyone needs legal coverage. But I also want to point out that USCCA is completely pro-queer. I mean, they will recognize queer marriages. They have openly queer people working at their offices. They are absolutely queer-friendly. So it makes sense for Pink Pistols and OBS to be affiliated with them because they are absolutely a queer-friendly organization. So if you haven't signed up, please sign up and use our affiliate code. If you're already a member, well, get some classes.
And if you know some of these new gun buyers, the new people that are getting into the fold, like anybody, I mean, that's what I tell everybody. If you carry, you need to get carry insurance, because if you end up having to use the gun, there is a chance, and I might argue, albeit a small one, that the officer is going to say, yeah, this looks pretty cut and dry. Just don't leave town for the next couple of weeks, just in case we need to talk to you about something. But overall, that's the end of it. They were a bad guy. They were doing bad things, and it's clear that you shot them, and they needed getting shot. But as a general rule, there's a better chance that there's going to be something more crazy that will go on, where there might be lawsuits, there might be things, and having carry insurance is great. And there's a number of good affiliates, but let me tell you, USCCA is one of the better ones.
Yeah, and for fans of the old Gunblock Variety Cast, Beth Alcazar works for USCCA. You know, she's a wonderful lady. I can't say enough good things about it. And so, protect yourself, get training, and give us a little more love. Thanks.
And also thanks to Nate Spencer for our music. I'm stuck at home homeschooling my daughter, who doesn't want to listen to daddy's noise anymore. And I still have to cook and clean and take care of all the house. And Erin pretty much is doing the exact same thing that she's always done, except she gets to talk to people less, which she likes. How we're weathering this quarantine is assorted, and so is our podcast.
Well done. Good night, everybody.